Ian Chapman is an author, musician and lecturer at Otago University, and his love of pop culture led him to seek out contributors from all walks of Kiwi life for the book, which is perhaps only slightly provocatively called OK Boomer. Well, yes, the famous, now infamous utterance by Green MP Chloe Swarbrick in Parliament in response to a heckler provided the inspiration for the title for A Walk Down Memory Lane. Well, it wasn't in my memory, I wasn't around for most of it. But anyway, good morning, Ian Chapman.
Hi, Catherine, how you doing?
Good. I've got to tell you something funny, though. I was in the supermarket the other day and this guy was pushing his trolley around with, I presume, his wife or partner who was pushing her trolley around. And they obviously, well, he was obviously objecting to whatever was being piped out of the supermarket musically, because I just walked past as he said, my generation had the best drugs, we had the best music. And then he walked past and she just looked bored and was trying to find the cheese or something. But anyway, if he's listening, well, I was listening.
Didn't the Who sound rowdy just now?
Oh, no, they're outstanding. No questions there. So your brief for this was what?
Well, it was such a tumultuous decade, and I was born in January 1960, so I was around for pretty much all of it. And it was just, turning 60 in January of this year, I thought, wow, actually, the entire 60s decade is turning 60. It would be a great time to do a book. I did a book on the 1970s a few years back and enjoyed the experience. And I thought, oh, it'd be great to go back to my childhood. And I was looking at the book very much through a child's eyes. And I think that kind of comes through a little in the book, perhaps. As I mentioned in the introduction, I think I spend more time on TV programs like the Flintstones and so forth rather than politics. But anyway, so it's through a child's eyes, but I thought it's such an eclectic, amazing decade. I'd love to do a really vibrant book, as you mentioned, packed full of photographs from the day. And because I was looking at it through a child's eyes, I knew I needed, if I wanted it to be like a factual sort of pseudo history book, I needed to get some
grown-ups.
Some people who are a bit older, some grown-ups, thank you, nicely put, yeah. Because my big fear, Catherine, would be that because I was doing what appeared on the surface to be a history book, that people would treat me as a historian, and I'm really not a historian. I'm a performing arts lecturer who was a kid and very interested in that decade.
Well, they're getting a rap, the boomers at the moment, but, you know, with a certain amount, look, when has there not been intergenerational friction? I'm curious about that OK Boomer, which I actually find I find it quite inoffensive. It's just a good way of saying you are mansplaining, womansplaining, whatever-splaining me. But have you found, as you've undoubtedly have numerous conversations about the book and its title, have you found some people have actually taken it to heart a bit?
A few people were a little miffed and thought it was a bit rude. I wasn't in the least bit offended. I actually, you know, quite happy to be a boomer. I was very happy the way Chloe used it. I thought it was great, a great platform to use the term. And as soon as I heard about that, I thought, oh, wow, there's my title. Thank you, Chloe Swarbrick.
So the kids of the 60s, as you were, just give us a quick walk through that decade and just put us back to some of the stuff that's seared on your memory.
What's really seared on my memory, well, there's certain events like the moon landing, the Waihine disaster, certain, you know, big events in our history. But what the overriding thing that I recall from my childhood, and something I'm extremely grateful for, was the simplicity of my childhood. You know, we were in a dead-end street, a cul-de-sac, and there was a huge gully down the back of all of our houses, and all of us kids every weekend would disappear into this gully. We'd be gone pretty much all day. Our mums would holler from the back steps for us to come back and have lunch, and we'd troop back up to our houses and then go back into the bush. We were on our own, and we were experimenting. We were having great time, super safe. And, you know, our biggest worry then was, you know, whose turn was it to dam the stream? And I'm an older dad. I've got a couple of fairly young kids still at school. And, you know, the complicated life they lead now with social media and devices and the whole world being delivered to them on the screen every day, frightening. And I think of the simplicity of my childhood, and that's what really stands out for me.
So let's talk about some of those cultural influences, though. I mean, I think most boomers accept that it was a lucky generation in many ways. Obviously, you know, post-war was when the boom began. And we were entering into not only economic times that were, you know, reasonably prosperous, but also into popular culture changes that would have massive influences. So when you delve into this, in various chapters. What are the kind of lenses that you apply across it? It was also, to finish the thought, it was also a time of exploration and pushing boundaries and optimism and a lot of innovation, right, came out of that generation. So as you work through the book, what are some of the lenses that you put across that generation?
So I think the overriding, well, and this is sort of autobiographical too, I guess, is the music is an ongoing thread throughout the book. Because it was the, you know, I mean, okay, rock and roll was born in the 1950s, but in the 1960s it became the mark of teenagehood. And it was like, for the first time, we had a generation of kids, of teenagers, who weren't aspiring to grow up like their parents. They were, you know, they had rock and roll expressing everything for them. And mentioning of that, because of the... as a performing arts lecturer, and you know, the notion of doing a book, I can't put performing arts into it, and that's one of the reasons, so I'm going off a slight tangent here, Catherine, why I invited so many poets to be part of the book, that, you know, top New Zealand poets contributing their pieces to the book with their memories of the 1960s, because I wanted the book to have a performative aspect to it, an arts aspect. So getting back to your question, I guess I very much do look at it through an arty kind of creative lens.
Who are some of the contributors then?
Some of the contributors, okay, yeah. So... I was absolutely delighted to get one of the last interviews with the wonderful Max Merritt before he passed away. Oh. And his love and his love of music, his pride of what they achieved in the 1960s is just, you know, the knowledge that they were at the crest of a wave of something new and exciting. And as he said, you know, we felt like we could do anything. So Max Merritt, Judy Donaldson from the Chicks, the wonderful, fantastic, effervescent Dinah Lee, who I interviewed from Sydney and during COVID, and she was cursing and cursing because she said, I'm supposed to be out on the road, Ian, I'm supposed to be doing gigs, and here I am stuck at home. So Dinah Lee, Mike Chung. I also got interviews with people who weren't necessarily active as musicians in the 60s, but were formed, like I was, through the 60s. And so there's the likes of my good friend Graham Downs, Martin Phillips, Alistair Riddell, people like that who were formed by the 60s. So, yeah, a wonderful, wonderful array of people. I've got other people looking at other aspects of life back then, Materia Ture, looking at Māori issues in the 1960s. So a huge array of Keith Quinn, who I expected to talk about sport, and what really came through in his piece, because I gave people a very open brief, was his absolute adoration for the Beatles, which was rather wonderful. So yeah, music and the arts keep coming through in the book.
It's a time you can put a gloss of nostalgia over it, but then, as we always do, you look back and you see a lot of the things that were wrong. And, you know, interesting with Stuff doing its apology to Māori for coverage over the years. You know, there were any number of ways that the world was run in the 60s that were not fair, or things that happened to people that were glossed over and sort of swept over. Do you talk at all about that sense of who ran the world in the 60s and who didn't?
Yeah, more with a New Zealand lens than a global lens. And you're very, yeah, great to point out that the Stuff apology. So Materia, for instance, in her piece talks about the, you know, the casual racism and the fact that the decade started off at the 1960 tour of South Africa with no Māori in it. So, you know, it wasn't a great start, frankly. And a lot of the seeds for the action that was taken in the 70s by Māori were sown in the 60s. So Peter's piece is very pertinent and great about that. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there was a lot wrong about the 60s as well, and I try not to look at it through rose-tinted glasses. It wasn't, you know, perfect by any means. We had we have come a long way, I think, looking back at it.
What did you use as some of your source material? Because obviously, people have written things about things, and there are obviously archives and other ways of approaching it. But sometimes, when you want to put the flesh on the cultural bones, it's actually through the media of the time that you can actually get some insight into some of those the way that things were and who ran the place. And so, you're using quite a bit of extensive source material written at the time.
Yes, and also because I'm a music iconographer, that is the artwork and the visual imagery of music and the performing arts. I'm a very visually motivated person, so I plundered the wonderful research libraries, the Hocken and the Turnbull, Pukeariki in New Plymouth, and also put the call out for just in the general public for images, for photographs, for posters, for anything from back in that era. And those images also, you know, I firmly believe, you know, picture tells 1,000 words, which is why the book is so pictorial. But the New Zealand government history website is actually a wonderful gold mine as well.
You've got a breakdown of the lingo, including right at the beginning of the book. Can you talk us through some of what was common then and either is remembered with affection or embarrassment?
Yeah, I mean, terms, you know, FAB, which I certainly, who do you align FAB to, Catherine? Do you have a...
You've lost me. I told you, I'm not old enough.
Oh, okay. Thunderbirds, FAB, Scott. Anyway.
So that's, sorry.
That's all right. Don't flip your wig, man. I mean, you know, people don't say that now. To be wigging out or having a gas or, you know, that was a great trip, Daddy-O. Lay it on me. What's your bag? He's a bad cat. Hang loose. Maybe a few of those have survived, but I think my kids, they're foreign language, frankly.
Don't flip
and,
your
wig
here.
Yeah. Have you got any bread, Dad? My kids wouldn't say that to me. They'd expect, but you know, we don't want bread. They don't think bread's money.
Excellent stuff. And what were we eating in those days?
Oh, I know. So our tastes were very much simpler by necessity. Our supermarkets today are an absolute treasure trove compared to what they were in the 60s, sorry, when the, you know, a shrimp cocktail was, oh my God, how exotic. So Shirley Johnson wrote a wonderful piece for me for the book that she titled From Saveloys to Spag Bol, Eating and Drinking in the 60s. And yes, let's just say, you know, my dad was still partial to a lard sandwich back in the 60s. Things were a lot simpler. They're quite exotic now by comparison.
What about parties?
Parties, yes.
Because parties evolve throughout the ages. How did people party in the 60s, depending on which, you know, part of the... Which part of the age spectrum you were on?
I think, you know, the old pull out the beer crate, sit around, get a guitar out was a lot more common. I know it still exists today, but the good old Kiwi party, sing-along party was, a norm, the standard thing. And I've got some great photographs of partying in the 1960s of, you know, sort of impromptu gatherings in neighbourhoods and families and so forth. And there's a lot of that kind of DIY ethos where, your nana will get on the piano or that kind of thing. So partying was, I think, very, I don't know what the word would be, earthy and organic.
And the hairstyles, again, they ranged wildly. What was happening in New Zealand?
So Susan Vidler wrote a piece for me about hairstyles because she's an ex-hairdresser. And, yeah, everything went. And everything got piled up on top. I recall my older sisters with these beehives and, you know, everything lashed in place to the nth degree. Think Marge Simpson, actually. That's a comparison that comes to mind. But the hairstyles for the men, too, amazing. My cousin Brian, for instance, he had such a mane of hair that sometimes we couldn't find it. It was,
Unless you were a square, of course, as they said in the States. Okay, I'm a boomer, 1960, lasting memory, no choice haircut, short back and sides, scarred from having to use a waxy toilet. You'll have to help me out with what that is. School milk.
Oh,
you had the milk in schools.
School milk. Gosh, my memories of school milk are so vivid. We used to get a little half pint of milk each day that would be delivered in the morning, and then it would sit in the hot sun until lunchtime, so it was nice and warm, close to going off. And some kids loved it, some kids hated it. I loved it in the winter, hated it in the summer. But my school actually, and I'm not sure if this was commonplace, hit upon the idea of giving us tiny little sachets of milkshake powder that we could put in and shake it up and actually have flavoured milk, which I thought was very progressive.
That's very
But yeah,
flashy.
School milk was a great thing.
Now, here we go. Pre-10s, 60s type memories include making tie-dyed tank tops and Big Sister's paisley pantsuits.
Oh, the paisley pantsuit. Have you never worn one, Catherine?
No. Perhaps at a dress-up party. I was a kid during the long frock era, which was getting into the 70s, where everyone wore long frocks when you went out for things.
Mm.
But no. I don't... No, I'm not really a pantsuit girl, I have to say. But they look great. They look great if you can carry it, so to speak. And you mentioned some of the TV shows, so Thunderbirds. What else was around in your childhood?
Mr. Ed, the talking horse.
Oh, of course. How the hell could we fall for that? Like, your poor horse is left in its stable with the top half open and moving its teeth around and we're supposed to think it's talking to us, and we bought it all.
We bought it. All right. Yeah. You know, the real horses that we had down the road paled in comparison to the talents of Mr. Ed. There was Lassie, you know, what a showcase for the collie dog. Obviously, there are things like the Beverly Hillbillies and Coronation Street ran rampant. Clutch Cargo.
Clutch Cargo. Remember Clutch Cargo and his pals, Spinner and Paddlefoot. There you go.
Excellent. Very good. Doctor Who, Fireball XL5.
Which Doctor Who was it in the 60s, though? Ooh, that would have been the really, really early guy. No, Pertwee was in the 70s before John Pertwee. Patrick, what's his name?
Yeah, Patrick. Yes, you're right with the Patrick. And I can't bring the surname to mind. Patrick. There'll be heaps of people saying, shouting it out right now.
This is what happens when you turn 60, Ian.
I know. Look, some less, some more dubious ones were popular on our TV shows. The Rolf Harris Show. Good Lord.
Yes. That was huge. Right into the 70s with his wobble board and all his other stuff. And goodness what we were to learn later.
I know. So New Zealand shows, Town and Around. Studio One, The Country Touch. There was also the likes of Gentle Ben, if you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like a bear standing on two legs.
Yes,
High Chaparral. And here we go, the Black and White Minstrel Show.
Goodness, as we said, some things have changed.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
All right, Ian, good fun. Thanks very much. Ian Chapton, the book is OK, Boomer. It celebrates the decade of the swinging 60s. They turned 60. That decade began its life 10 years ago at the start of this year. So Ian has used it as inspiration for his new book.